It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you here. Here we are, May 17th. I mean, what do you call it? For most of us, school is either out this week or out within the next little bit. For us parents, it's, I don't want to say it's a sad time, but certainly can add to, our stress levels sometimes, trying to keep our kids entertained for the next 3 months. However, here's a suggestion, and again, it's only a suggestion, get them involved in some physical activities. Get them to join the YMCA. Let me rephrase it. Join them up. The YMCA or some other physical program. Physical activity is great for the mind and the body. And it's a great way to, work out some pent-up energy. And guess what? When you have to be at the Y or some other organization at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, they're not staying out till 2 o'clock the night before, right? So consider that. Also, think about this. Completely changing the subject here. The last couple of months, I've been working with a good friend of mine, Sidney Young, and him and I put together a webinar course. A class, if you will, on how to buy real estate with no money down. It is sick, sick good stuff. I mean, it is fantastic. If you've been looking for a part-time business or a full-time business that you can do from your home, check out this webinar class. And, you can hit me up on Facebook or Twitter or reach out to me, Bert@BertMartinez.com. I'll send you all the details. But this class walks you through how to do everything, how to write everything up, how to find the properties, what kind of language you should use or what you should say. And we had one of our students just a couple of weeks ago who took the class within 7 days. She's a psychotherapist by trade, but she needs something to supplement her income. And within 7 days after taking the class, she got her first deal, made $2,500, $2,800, something within that neighborhood. So anybody can do it. It doesn't take a whole lot It doesn't take a whole lot of knowledge. It takes a little bit of work. But here's the best part. No money. You don't need credit. You don't need money. You don't need anything like that to make this thing work. So hit me up, Bert@BertMartinez.com. I'll send you the details. And, I think you'll enjoy it. Just a very rewarding way to make extra money or replace your current income. It is fantastic. Hey, speaking of money, my good friend Jason Drone here on Money for Lunch. Jason Drone has been marketing online for 8 years, working with hundreds of businesses and thousands of entrepreneurs through his courses and done-for-you services. He's best known for his quickest path to cash strategies, where he cuts years of testing and development out of his clients' lives, delivers sales funnels that are both automated and profitable. Jason Drone, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Hey, how are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Well, excellent, man. I'm excited to have you on the show because what's that?
You said speaking of money. Ha ha.
Speaking of money. Well, you know what? And I'm excited to have you on because I want to talk about this. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit and talk about what's the best way to convert people who don't buy from you the first time?
That's a great question. So typically, it's funny because especially when you're marketing online, it's different if you have a store, storefront, or a retail location or whatever. But, when you're marketing online, the fact of the matter is that, at best, only about 2% of the people who view your sales page or come to your website or whatever are actually going to purchase anything. which is weird and daunting. And when I first got into this business, you know, a decade ago, I was so excited, you know, when I got my first 2 visitors and 5 visitors and 10 visitors. And then I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to, you know, make a fortune. And if every single one of these people buys something, then, you know, it's I get to go live in a mansion, you know, somewhere.
That's right. It's all over, man.
It's all over, right. Yeah, I'm retired. I'm done, you know. And but the fact of the matter is that you need to get lots, much more traffic than just 2 visitors or 5, but because the best converting website, sales funnel, sales video, whatever, is only going to convert at about 2%. I mean, even Amazon's product listings converted about 8%, you know, and you would expect every time somebody goes through an Amazon page they're going to buy something, but it doesn't happen that way. So one of the best ways to re-engage the folks who are just looking around to is to get them on an email list and then market to them through email. And a lot of people, I mean, you know, there's so many new technologies out. You know, there's banner ad retargeting and, you know, Facebook pages and all kinds of other stuff, different ways to re-engage your prospects. But email is still one of the most profitable that you can have.
Well, you know, something I want to interject, too, is even I think in a brick and mortar store, I mean, how many times have you walked into a store, you know, especially at a mall, where you walk into a store and you don't buy anything?
Mm-hmm.
And
many,
I bet
times.
You.
Well, it's funny.
Many, many times.
What,
so,
one
go
of
ahead.
My first clients is a craft store. They sell sewing machines, you know, and I had no idea back then the sewing machines could sell for $2,000, $3,000, and $5,000, but so they sell sewing machines and craft kits and supplies and everything. And when I walked in, we were going through, this is 10 years ago, we were going through their website and a bunch of other stuff. They had an email list of 1,800 people. These were all buyers. Mm. These were all people, you know, 1,800 people. And with that email list, they ended up offering digital training. They opened a new location because we fed it in. You know, we looked at their Google Analytics and saw that, they're, you know, a third of their customers were coming from Warren, you know, which is 45 or 50 miles away. So they opened up a second location. There's all kinds of really cool stuff you can do when you have that data, you know, not least of which is being able to reach back out to them, you know, a couple times a week or even every day and saying, look, I have this new class, I have a new blog post, I have a new product, you know, and communicating the features and the benefits and everything to your email list.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, the reality is, whether you're doing it online or brick and mortar, most of your clients are not going to buy from you the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless there's a specific reason, you know, back to the sewing machine. Hey, I got to, you know, I broke my needle, so therefore I got to replace it. I have a specific need that is urgent, and so I got to get it handled. Excuse me. You know, as opposed to when you're in the mall and you're shopping, hey, I need a new pair of pants, but it's not urgent, it's not very specific. I'm just looking because maybe my jeans are wearing out, or I just need to add another pair of pants to my rotation. That's what I call it. I don't know what else to call it, but you know, you have like 4 or 5 pairs of pants. You just kind of rotate through them anyway. But you know, the interesting thing about it is some of this online stuff, and I want to get your opinion on this, can be directly applied to a brick and mortar store, because when you have people walk in, you know, you could try to get them into your email list right there on the spot. Oh, listen, before you walk out, you know what, why don't you, you know, let me send you some free coupons, or let me send you this or whatever. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And stores use it to great effect. I mean, you know, what's your email address at checkout, or
yes,
sign up for a rewards card, a customer loyalty card. That's all they are. I mean, yeah,
right.
They give you discounts and stuff, but at the end of the day, it's a way for them to track your purchase behavior, and at the very least, get your email address. So that's one way to do it. The other thing, you know, the other note is that it's about 13 times easier to sell something else to somebody who already bought. So it's not necessarily email isn't necessarily just used from a prospect kind of converting them first or converting them the first time. It's also used for upsells or what we call it ascension, you know, where they buy one thing and then they come back and buy another and another and another.
Right.
You can use email that way. The important thing is to take note or at least arrange them in different lists and put your prospects in one list and your buyers in another so that you know that this person, they bought from you in the past and this is what they bought.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. I love it. All right, so let me ask you this. Here we are. We're going to send our non-buyers an email. So how do you know what email, you know, what to email them?
That's a great question. So this really kind of gets at the heart of who your customer is, of what your customer avatar is. And your customer avatar is really built on two things. So you have your demographics, which is, I mean, that's kind of what you think about when you think about customer avatar. You think about their age, you know, male or female, are they married, how much money do they make, did they go to school, you know, even location, where are they geographically, you know. So there's that kind of information. There's really, really great tools, one of which is called Quantcast, and Quantcast will show you what – first of all, how much traffic a site's getting and what their demographic makeup is. So if you go in and type photography, then you can see who visits photography sites. And I was actually just on the other day, and the biggest market for photography is, what was it, 35 to 44, who completed grad school and were predominantly Asian in the photography.
Interesting.
Market. And made over $150,000 a year. Like, okay, that's a market that we can go after. Yeah.
Sure.
You know? The second part of the customer avatar profile is what's called psychographics. And psychographics are the messaging that you use in your ad copy, in your sales pages, and your website. That's what gets the people in your demographic interested in whatever it is you're trying to offer. And so – to answer your question, what do you know? You know, what? How do you know what to send out to them? It's stuff that people in your customer avatar would find interesting. So, you know, just going to the photography example, you know, those people, they need the top 10 lenses for 2016. You know, you can put your affiliate links, but a blog post or a report on that kind of stuff, or 7 lighting tips for your next portrait session or whatever. So it's things that, you know, training and material and content that they would find interesting, that they would love to get in their email inbox and then click through to go over to your blog post or watch a video or buy something.
Yeah, I like that. And I want to focus on one of the things that you said, and that is you have to know your customers.
You have to know
your customers enough to say, hey, this will be of interest to my customers. If you're into photography, lighting tips are always of interest. Latest equipment, latest technology, all these things.
Software.
Yeah, all these things are, you know, something, what do you call it, of interest to your customers. Yeah, it's all important to them, yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you have no idea, you can always ask them. You can always survey them, you know, and surveys that are slanted towards answer these questions so we can deliver a better experience for you, they always suck. People, nobody's going to fill out that survey. Nobody cares enough because as far as they're concerned, they'll just go to somebody else to find the information that they want because you're not providing it, you know. So, but if you ask more pointed questions, even if they're a little bit more general, about, you know, what their circumstances are, what have they tried in the past, what have they not done, you know, they can tell you that.
Yeah. No, I love that. Yeah. Well, you know what? And I think that if you have not interacted with your clients in a while, sending them a survey like you just mentioned is kind of a almost an insult slash waste of time. But if you're interacting, with your list on a regular basis, then it's not going to be so bad, I don't think, because they know you. There's a little bit of rapport there.
Right, exactly. Well, one of the things that we do is especially we buy a lot of traffic for our software services. And for Scriptly, what we do is after somebody downloads a report, we ask four questions. And the four questions are really designed to it's quantitative, you know, so the questions aren't necessarily difficult. But it gives us a little bit more insight into how we should be marketing to them in the future. So, you know, one of them is, are you actively building your email list? One, your yes or no. Another question is, how big is your email list currently? Is it, you know, are you just starting off? Is it between 2,000 and 4,000 people, 4 to 10, 10 and up? And because people have different challenges. Marketers
right.
have different challenges based on the size of their email list. And then, you know, if you're 10,000 plus, it's not necessarily about blasting your entire list with the same offer, but it's more about segmentation and, you know, making sure that the right people are getting the right message. And then one of the last question is, what are you selling? Is it coaching, consulting, digital products, physical products, software? You know, because depending on what they're selling, that changes the messaging and that changes some of the methodology of their autoresponder sequences and stuff. So once we get answers to those questions, then we know exactly how to market to them in the future.
Yeah. No, I love it. And I hope that you guys are picking up on these little nuances that Jason is throwing out there, these nuggets, if you will. Know your audience. And just because you have a list of photographers or a list of sewing machine-related people, they may not all need the same email. He mentioned segmentation, and that is something that is so mm-hmm. important because maybe somebody who's been on your list for a couple of days doesn't need the same message somebody who's been on your list for a couple of years. Just an idea.
Right. Yeah. And it's what we end up doing is a lot of our segmentation is based on action. So we have kind of our general level of subscribers. And our general level of subscribers, they'll view a blog post, they'll click through a link, maybe do a survey, or they'll, you know, download a free stuff or whatever. You know, and then the next level deep is they landed on a sales page. And we've actually, they've watched some of the sales videos or they watched the whole thing or whatever. So we want to deliver messages based on that sales message to them. The level one down from there is they clicked an add to cart button, meaning they put something in their quote-unquote shopping cart, but they didn't buy. And so that's the next level. So they get information based on, you know, hey, you've added this to your shopping cart, discounts are expiring, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we've all got those emails from Amazon, Newegg, and Best Buy, and Target. You know, this is in your shopping cart. It's a very effective closing strategy. And then once they check out, they get all of their buyer member email. So there's really four levels to engagement that we nurture through email. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. Let me ask you this. Let's talk about content because we all this comes down to content. Email is content. Something that you write on your blog is content. So what role does content or your blog playing in all this rapport building, email sequencing type stuff?
That's a great question. So content, typically, you know, content is really anything that you create, you know, that's forward facing or even, you know, buyer facing, but, you know, something that people can kind of anchor your brand to. So we use blog content and content marketing in a lot of stuff anymore. So we're kind of outside of the realm of, you know, marketing as of 5 or 10 years ago, which is send somebody to a sales page and just keep, you know, bashing them over the head with your offer, and then eventually they'll buy. It used to work, not quite so anymore. I mean, buyers now, prospects are looking to know, like, and trust you and know, like, and trust your brand. And in order to do that, you need to do some brand building through email or through your marketing in general. And one of the best ways to do it is just to make sure that you're posting relevant blog content, and then you send an email out to your list to say, hey, I just posted this. This is brand new. This is for you. You know, this will help you solve X problem in your life. And then they will move from your email list to your blog, click the banners, click the links in the blog post, visit your sales pages. And that's really the glue that brings it all together. It's your content.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And again, I want to point this out. I want to emphasize, you mentioned a couple times solving a problem, right? Because that's really what it's all about. We don't want to read for the point of reading. We want to read because you can solve a problem, or you can help me. You know, maybe lighting necessarily isn't solving a problem, but lighting might be something that a photographer would like to know something about, or again, the latest technology. Or maybe it's, hey, here's something about sewing machines, or here's something about fitness, or, you know, golfing, or whatever it is.
Yeah, and it's really just about it's about knowing your audience and knowing what they want, or at least, you know, having enough information about your audience to presume what they want, or what they want more information about.
Right, and again, what I'm taking away from today's conversation is, A, most importantly, know your audience, and then B, communicate to them on a regular basis. It doesn't always have to be selling them something, but it could be, you know, here's a blog post, here's a really neat video, here's an offer kind of a thing.
Right.
So I love
it.
Absolutely. I love it, man.
And a lot of branding, a lot of brand building. At the end of the day, email marketing, I mean, you can write an email, hit send, you get some sales. Depending on your list, you get a lot of sales. You know?
Right.
That's one of the
You know what, and I want to talk about – I want to say this again because I want to make sure people understand this. There are people out there who will literally sell you millions and millions of emails. And their theory is, listen, we're going to sell you these millions of emails, and if only, you know, a fraction, a quarter of 1% buy whatever your offer is, you'll make millions of dollars overnight. Well, the challenge with that is that they don't know you. So they have to know you. It goes back to know, like, and trust. And so depending on the size of your list, and that if you've been active with that list, if they really know you, yes, I think you can make a lot of money. Otherwise, you have to build a rapport and you know, start from scratch. And so I want you to talk about this real quick. So let's say I've had a list. I've had a list. It doesn't matter what size, but I've been ignoring them. It's been maybe 3 or 4 or 5 months or a year before I've emailed them.
Mm-hmm.
What can I expect when I start emailing them again?
That's a great question. So what you can expect, the reality of mailing to a cold list is that you're going to get a lot of unsubscribes, you're going to get spam notices, and you're going to get a lot of email that just never gets to where it's supposed to go. It's undelivered email. So that's going to happen for a couple emails. But there's what we do is we send them what's called a re-engagement series. So a re-engagement series is 3 emails, and in those 3 emails we use subject lines that are they have a very high open rate, meaning when somebody sees that subject line, they think it's from a friend, and it is, because we're trying to be friendly with them, and and we send them something like a YouTube video. Now, a YouTube video, not of you, just a cool YouTube video of something that they would be interested in. So let's say for photography, might send them a YouTube video of lighting tips or some other noted kind of celebrity in the photography community, maybe send a link to his podcast or whatever. This isn't brand building. This isn't, you know, this is very simply training them to open emails from you and click links. We don't care about your brand at this point. You know, we're just trying to re-engage them, wake them up, you know, say, oh, okay, I kind of remember opting in for this guy, you know, like 8 months ago. But 8 months is forever in internet email answering times. So all we want to do is we want to start to kind of nurture that trust, nurture that bond again. The second email we send the day after, we still don't link to your site, don't link to your content. We link somewhere else, somewhere that we can do a little bit more co-branding with. So maybe it's Facebook, maybe it's a Facebook group, or YouTube again. It's completely fine. The third email is where we link to a piece of content from you, and you send that the day after. So it's email, you know, today, tomorrow, and the next day.
Then, I love it. I love
it. Then we can start to move them back into your process, but we haven't. We're just starting to gain the right to do that. So it's really about continued sustained effort on your part.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Okay, so I hope that you guys have gotten a lot of meat out of this today. And I want to plug this for Jason because I love what Jason does. He's one of those guys who not only can you tell he knows what he's talking about, but he takes the time to really help you out. He's developed a program called Scriply.org. Scriply.org. This will eliminate all sorts of headaches. A lot of you guys listening right now are saying, hey, I would love to engage with my audience more, but I don't know what to write. Scriply.org takes care of that. It will write re-engagement sequences. It will write a sales sequence. It will write all sorts of different emails already for you, so you don't have to write any of that. Scriply.org is the place to go. If you have questions, you can reach out to Jason at Scriply.org. And let me tell you, it's a fabulous program. I'm endorsing it because I use it as well. And it is the most powerful piece of software out there that will probably cut your content creation by 70% when it comes to developing emails. That's the hardest thing.
Yeah.
So it's an awesome program.
It takes about 2 minutes. Takes about 2 minutes to write a multi-day autoresponder sequence. And we just added the 26 sequence in there. We just added the strategy session sequence, which is great for coaches and consultants. And we have physical product sequences and webinar replay emails. And, you know, you name it, it's in there.
I love it. Jason Drone, thank you so much for stopping by today. I appreciate it very much. Looking forward to having you back again soon, my friend.
Awesome. I'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Guys, Scriply.org. Scriply.org is the place to go. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. My next guest, Greg Gamet, the co-founder and CEO of several successful businesses, including Denver Consulting Group, Canna Score, Cush Bottles Colorado, Dank Dispensary, and Elm Street Properties. Greg was also just named Entrepreneur of the Year by a prestigious trade magazine. Greg is on the board of directors of several organizations and is widely considered one of the experts in his industry. Greg Gamet, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You bet. All right, let's talk about this. Greg, you have several companies and products. Tell us a little bit about you and give us a little history background about your businesses.
Okay, I'll try not to take up the whole interview here, but I'm going to turn the clock back to 2009 when I was operating a large landscape and land development company. Medical marijuana was passed in Colorado, so I started a dispensary called Dank, parent company JGB Ventures. In August of 2009, kind of grew slow over the next 5 years. I kept doing what I was doing. I had a business partner named Justin Jones who co-founded it with me, and then Brian Sullivan came along. He is a lawyer and a partner as well, about a couple months after the found partners started the business. Medical marijuana was good to us, but once retail hit, we were one of the first ones to open up January 2014. Sales went through the roof. I stopped giving hard bids and doing hard business and started doing 100% of the green industry business. But with the entrepreneurial spirit, we couldn't find good packaging, so I founded Kush Bottles Colorado, which is a packaging company. The groundwork was already laid by a couple founders, Dallas and Nick out in California. They started Kush Bottles out in California. We just kind of had a distribution agreement. Now we're all together and we're publicly traded on the market right now. KSHB is the symbol. We're on the over-the-counter market. And from that, Denver Consulting Group was born to help other people do what we did in the industry. And then Canascore is a software company that we recently founded last year that rates your compliancy kind of like a FICA score for the banking industry. So it's a kind of a regulatory arm for each bank to make sure businesses aren't laundering money and following the state laws without ambiguity, as the Cole memo says. But that's a quick version of it. I'm sure we'll get into a few of these as we move on here.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about this. Tell us a little bit more about Denver Consulting Group. Exactly what do you do? And tell us, who's your typical client?
Okay, we have two different kinds of typical clients. I'll start out with the business that's already going. So we'll have a dispensary marijuana grow op here in Colorado. We also work in every state. There's medical or retail marijuana. There's 24 of those total. The recreational states, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, Colorado, bear a lot of business right now because of the recreational side so new. But we'll take the existing customer and figure out if they need SOP manuals, employee handbooks. We'll train their individuals on site here at our training center. We'll also let them shadow our employees. We'll go in and do audits using the Canascore software to find out where their compliant deficiencies are so they can kind of, you know, navigate the rules better so they're not getting fined or shut down. We'll also, give them marketing material. We'll design their ad for them. We'll give them recommendations of where to run their ads. Really, it's a no pun intended, but it's the whole gamut when it comes to the consulting side of thing. We're seed to sell, and one of our specialties is inventory tracking and getting people involved in that. That's where the big lack was. So some of these states are requiring a Franwell product called Metric in Oregon and here and some parts in California. We're experts on that. It's a inventory tracking system that uses RFID tags, so you know exactly where your plants are at all times. Not that they're going to get up and run away, but they do grow and move rooms and that kind of thing. So that's on the consulting side.
Yeah, that's amazing. Let me ask you this, okay, because I think Colorado is, I think the world is looking at Colorado, certainly the U.S. First of all, Colorado, I think, beginning of this year announced that they had solved all their deficit issues because of the boom that marijuana has produced for them. And I wanted to get your take on this. You live there in Denver?
I live in Denver, City of Denver, Denver County. Lived here for about 16 years now. I moved here from Iowa.
Okay.
So the difference between – go ahead.
I was going to say, have you noticed, you know, what were all the – everybody was concerned about crime rate, this, young people just being stoned out of their mind on a regular basis. Have you seen any of that?
I haven't seen anything. The numbers, the proof is in the numbers. Crime rate has dropped since recreational marijuana has been passed. Teen usage has gone down. It's the black market is pretty much dried up. I wouldn't really know where to look on the black market at this point, but as far as I know, it's really hard for people to produce and procure and sell marijuana on the black market here, because you can go into a store and have 40 different strains to choose from that are tested and clean amongst edibles, and you're going to get some really good knowledge as you're buying these different products now. And, you know, back in the day, buying black market marijuana was a bit of a shady thing. Well, now we've taken the crazy hand out of the basement, so to speak, and now, you know, everybody can come in and see that it's a real business, and it's and the profits are there if you're running your business right. The other thing, the only difference I see in Colorado now is the housing market, the rental rates, and traffic has all gone up.
I love it. Yeah, I think that what we're seeing here with the marijuana deal is the same thing that we saw with prohibition. However, the difference is this: alcohol, as far as I know, things like liquor, whiskey, and so on, don't really cure anything, right? But marijuana has a medicinal purpose. It really solves problems. It helps people in so many different ways besides the recreational part.
Well, other than the fact that it can't kill you either, there's three ways you can die from marijuana. A pallet of it can fall on your head, you can choke on it, or a guy named marijuana can shoot you. You know, go back to looking at the figures of what alcohol can actually do to your body, to the community, and with drunk driving and people dying of cirrhosis of the liver, it's really night and day to compare the two. You know, Colorado's
right.
Bill was to regulate marijuana like alcohol. So the next phase of this is trying to get, places where people can gather and use the product together and share the product. So much like a bar, right now that's not allowed, but there's some bills being passed now. When you look at the facts, peanuts kill more people a year than marijuana. So, there hasn't been a recorded death in history from overdosing from marijuana. So really that negative view of marijuana has been brought forth from, the early 1910s and 1920s for, people put the negative spin on it for business purposes. But I think it's to the point now where it's becoming, somewhat mainstream.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm excited. I can't wait to be able to invest in the industry myself. I think it's a fantastic opportunity. And let's talk about this. You mentioned, is it CannaScore, the one that helps people with compliance?
Yeah, so CannaScore is a software program. It's different in each state because the rules and regulations are different each state. So basically, we took the rules, made a list of questions, and run that through an algorithm that spits out a score, much like a FICO score or Dun & Bradstreet score. But instead of really all the P&Ls pretty much in this industry are glossy and shiny, and banks love those. But the real risk for a bank to have a customer is how compliant they are, because they could be shut down the next day. Banks just don't want your account. They want your account. They want to lend you money. They want, they want to make money in several different ways.
And they don't want to be
embarrassed. Exactly. So this is one way for the banking to add a compliant arm to their bank without hiring 15 investigators that go out and do it. They kind of require their customers to do it. This is also good for landlords. This is also good for me. Like, I'm not in the day-to-day over at Dank as much as I used to be. So, we have a CannaScore over there that goes in and does this as a third-party audit. There's also an application coming out on this where businesses will be able to use a CannaScore app and get pretty close, but they won't get a final score until they get a third-party audit. But it's, I always tell everybody, when you run a marijuana business, you're actually running a compliant business. It's much like running a bank. There's a lot of rules and regulations that can get you shut down immediately if you don't follow them. So once you figure out how to run a compliant business, we get to grow a little bit of marijuana and sell it to people.
I love it, man. I love it. All right, so tell us, you're publicly traded on what exchange?
We're on the OTC market right now, Kush Bottles. It's KSHB. We're currently in a blackout period, so I got to be careful what I say. But, all our financials are posted there. It's a pretty good investment opportunity, not just us. I'm just saying the industry as a whole. But you want to be real careful. Several businesses, didn't do full S-1 filings. They've done filings using shell companies and revenues from different streams. But you have to do all that research on your own and talk to your, financial advisor on that end.
Sure.
Marijuana industry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I wanted to talk a little bit about how important marketing and public relations is to your success, because you're already in a very competitive industry, right? I mean, it was competitive from day one, and so talk about that. Talk about marketing.
Well, it becomes more competitive every day. There's new businesses open up. You know, our dispensary used to be the only one within a 10-block radius, you know, 20, 30-block radius. Now there's five or six. But so, you know, as far as marketing and PR, it's really important that you grow your brand. In the marijuana industry, if you have the best product, word of mouth travels really great. You know, a lot of industries, you build a great package around it, and you brand it, put it in a nice label on it. That's important on this side, but you got to remember, you know, patients and customers can't touch that package till they purchase it. So you got to have something that looks good from like 10 or 15 feet away. But we've worked hard to build brands that resonate with our audience and create a distinction in the marketplace. So PR is just one of the vehicles, you know, so we can get the news and build credibility among potential customers and investors out there, because everybody's looking to expand. So, you know, one day a customer that comes in your store, the next day could be calling you on the phone and say, I love the experience so much, I want one of these in, you know, so-and-so, California. How do I do it? So, you know, branding and respect, it's just across the board. It's the same as selling a soft drink or a alcohol
beverage. Now, back
beverage,
up a second.
You know,
let me ask you this, because you said that they're not allowed to touch the product. In other words, they can't sit there and look. They cannot hold a bud? Is it called buds? Or they cannot hold a sample in their hand.
Flowers. Well, we can give them a jar. They can open. This is Colorado law.
Right.
We give them a jar, they can open the lid, they can smell it, but they can't touch it. Now, if they wanted a gummy bear edible or a gummy edible or a cookie from the back, we can hand them the product while they're on camera right there, where they can look on the back and see the ingredients. I mean, it's a pretty sophisticated label now that we have. It looks, a lot of the products look like they could be on the shelf at Target or Walmart or any of those places. But, you know, we can't have it sitting out in the middle of the store for rules and regulations, but for obvious reasons, so someone doesn't put it in their pocket.
Right.
Because sometimes a bottle, you could fit five bottles in your pocket that contain, you know, $2,000 worth of merchandise. So the MED, which is the medical or the marijuana enforcement division here in Colorado, we've worked very closely with them, and they've actually trained some of their employees in our facility. Of course, you know, want that exchange between we call the bud tender, the person that's serving the flowers and the concentrates, or the bud tender, so the bartender, they ask for product and they get information on that product as they're looking at it, but they can't walk around with it. They have to stand right there at the counter.
Yeah, that's amazing. The bud tender, I love that. I just that's great. I think it's a great use of. I think it's fantastic. Oh man. Oh, that's funny as all get out. All right.
What state are you guys located in?
We're located in Arizona.
Arizona. So you have medical marijuana program there. And I encourage everybody, I mean, if you do come to Colorado, Oregon, or Washington, even if you don't use, just come by and see the process. It's real people working real jobs in a real industry. So it's a lot of people. We get 42% out of state at our Dank facility. So when I'm having a rough day, I can just go over, stand in our store, and I call it like the Midwest factor. All the Midwesterns that are driving here for vacation, coming in for the first time, and they just can't believe that they have access to this. And many of the customers on the recreational side from out of state are here to treat a medical condition. So
sure.
It's great to be able to see people get help that way.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Hold on a second. You know what, and again, this is what I like about marijuana. Yes, you can use it for recreational purposes. You can also use it, as we mentioned, to treat medical issues. To me, it's been a long time in coming. I'm grateful to see it, what do you call it? I don't know, I guess become legalized, and it's, of all the things that we need to worry about, marijuana is probably one of the few things, and you know, it also makes sense to me, because the minute that marijuana became legal in Colorado, all the black market's gone. There's no, you know, that is completely gone. And so if we were to follow suit in other states, you would see that crime completely disappear. You would also see the export from Mexico disappear. It's incredible.
Well, you got to think too. You know, the big argument is that marijuana is a gateway drug, and I don't agree with the argument, but let's just say that's true. Well, one of the reasons that might have been true in the past is you go see the guy that, you know, in a dark alley or his basement or whatever that had marijuana. Well, he had other products he'd like to push. He had, you know, maybe cocaine, maybe some other controlled substances that he would push at the same time. You go into a dispensary, we can't even carry Coca-Cola or non-infused products. Everything in the store is infused with marijuana. There's no other products that we can entice people to come in. You're coming to the store for one thing, and that's marijuana. You can't get anything else, and it's tracked and regulated by the gram, and you're paying taxes on it. You know,
well,
we did $996 million last year in Colorado. $42 million of it went to the school systems.
There you go. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, every state that I visit, all the schools are dying for money. Politicians consistently cut the education budget. And you know, here's a great way to solve that issue. Back to marijuana being a gateway drug, I can tell you from personal experience, you know, I've never wanted to do something else because other than eat. Marijuana is a gateway drug is a gateway to eating, not a gateway drug. It's a gateway to eating. That's about it. But you know, from my personal experience as a young man, I didn't want to do anything else. And I like what you said there about the fact that, you know, when you have a professional drug pusher who has invested interest to not only sell you marijuana, but to sell you this or sell you that or whatever. That's his job. That's what he's trying to do.
Absolutely.
You know, anyway, so getting away from that, I just think it's such a fabulous opportunity. As you mentioned, you know, talk to your financial advisor and see if it's a good fit for your portfolio. But I think it's a great idea. And I think that its time has come. Let me ask you this. What do you see happening either in your company or in the industry in the next 5 years?
Well, as new states legalize, it'll boom. So let's just take Colorado's numbers. We did $996 million, like I said a minute ago. If you take that by population, California will be doing $10 billion a year. Massachusetts, Maine, Michigan are all looking at legalizing recreational here in the fall. Some market analysts say Massachusetts will be a $7 billion industry because of the population density on the East Coast. People can drive there. In Maine, a $3 billion industry, even though it's, you know, like a lot like Colorado, but they'll get a lot of movement from, you know, Boston, Massachusetts, New York, all those other ways. We have 5.5 million roughly people in Colorado, and we did almost $1 billion. So tourism, we call it pot tourism here. Hotels are full. Rental cars is hard to find. I mean, they're finally catching up with that. But as a nation, you know, we're at 24 legal states for medical marijuana right now. So we're at the tipping point. A lot of it has to do with who gets elected. So if you have a very strong stance that you want marijuana legal, you should look at what candidates follow that, either on the Democrat side or Republican side, because really marijuana should be a nonpartisan issue. You know, we've got people in Texas quoting the Bible in favor of marijuana now, saying God didn't put it here on the planet as a mistake. So all types and all – is our manager at Dinks, everybody there from Texas. We were just featured on the Bill O'Reilly show. I'm not, you know, I'm a huge Fox News fan, but it's good to see, you know, programs and conservative programs like that coming to the marijuana industry and kind of open up people's eyes and shedding a positive light on the industry. Although it was a humorous video that they did, it was a Waters piece. But, you know, if you know, people start looking at this and the propaganda isn't all negative on marijuana, you can see states are turning, you know, places like Iowa, you know, Missouri, Oklahoma, and the two bookends of the South, I call it Florida and Texas. And those two are looking to go pretty quick here. But as those bookends of the South go, you'll even see the Bible Belt starting to get the squeeze. So, really, it's all about propaganda. It's all been negative up until probably 2009, and now we're starting to get, you know, doctors and radio talk show hosts like yourself that are open to having people in the industry on their shows to talk about the benefit.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and again, I think that if people put their fear aside, they put their prejudice aside, and they do some research, they'll find that cannabis is a fantastic, I don't want to use the word cure-all, but it is a great solution for many, many problems that that are facing not only the elderly but the sick. You know, there's just scores of research where children were treated with edible cannabis or in pill form cannabis, and their seizures stopped.
Oh, I've seen it firsthand. And we're not even – this is the tip of the iceberg. We're not talking about what it can do for the environment, you know, hempcrete and clothing and biomass and biofuel and paper products. It is an unbelievable plant that has thousands of uses that, you know, the medical marijuana side is now opening people up to it. You know, we've got people farming hemp here in Colorado now. It's very lucrative. You know, the CBD extract, which there's, you know, not to – give a big class here. There's THC and CBDs and CBAs and CBNs, and all those have medical benefits. But then the left behind product, the stock, stems, leaves, they make great oils and clothing and even concrete out of. So the farther, you know, if you really think an environment is a big issue, you know, the future environment and what happens is a big issue, you should really do some research on what cannabis and hemp and marijuana can do for the environment.
Yep, I love it. I love it. You know what? It's been a pleasure having you on the show today. I look forward to having you back and talk more about the industry as well as the growth that you guys are experiencing there. Greg Gamet, it's like I said, it's been a pleasure and looking forward to having you back again.
Okay, yeah, real quick, I wanted to thank you guys for having me and thank Randy Huff for setting this up. Great PR guy at Innovate. And you can visit us at www.denverconsultinggroup.com. And from there, you can branch out to all the other businesses. And I do appreciate the time, guys.
All righty. Good stuff there from Greg Gamet. Really, we covered the gamut. I know he's probably tired of that pun, but, you know, we did cover quite a bit about the marijuana industry. Both the recreational side, the financial side, the municipality of it, the medical side. I mean, to me, it is something that we need to look at from all sides and come to a conclusion that it's a worthwhile investment. And I don't mean for you financially, but for the states, for our education system, for our medical system. It is something that we need to become aggressive about so we can save lives and help our communities. As always, I'm grateful for you guys listening to my show. I appreciate you guys spreading the word on Facebook and on Twitter. I appreciate you guys following me on those platforms as well. I appreciate the interaction. And as always, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.